And now, coming at you live from WRAR Studios, we now bring you The Defenders Live with our very own Miss Anna Edwards. Let's hear what Miss Anna has to say. Anna, take it away.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. Defenders Live is brought to you as a production of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and you can learn more at defendersfje.org. and defendersfje.blogspot.com. You can learn more about this radio show and listen to past shows if you go to defendersliveradio.blogspot.com. And you can also send me a note about the show, about a topic, about anything you hear on this program at defenderslivehost@gmail.com. defenderslivehost@gmail.com. Well, welcome to the chilly weather. I noticed that it was maybe 20 degrees cooler at the same time today than it was yesterday. Excuse me. I'll get my grammar straight. And I don't know about the rest of you, but the top of my head is feeling a tremendous sigh of relief. I'd like to remind people, for those of you who may or may not know, a reminder is always a good thing, about Richmond's cooling shelters. They do offer at least three locations where, when the temperatures are over, I believe, 95 degrees, you can go during the day and get shelter from the sun and get water. And the locations are posted, I believe, on the Defenders website. You can also go to the city's website, so defendersfje.org or defendersfje.blogspot.com, but you can also go to the city's website, which is richmondgov.com, in order to find that out. Chances are you could simply hit any search engine on the internet, and then of course you can always call 211. That's a number that I haven't put out very much because I sort of forget. We all know 411 and 911, but 211 is a general Health and Human Services information and referral line. And when you are facing a problem and you don't know where to call, this is a good place to start. It's an easy to remember number. It's 211. So there you are to start our week this week. It's July, and we are fully in it now. Last week, of course, there were fireworks and all kinds of commemorations and leading to all kinds of trains of thought about the history of celebrating Independence Day in the United States. And on this radio show, of course, we talk a lot about independence, about the extrapolated and associated concepts of liberation and freedom. And so I hope that you had a lot of good conversations last week about it. There was an interesting rebuttal against the fireworks, which, you know, as a kid and really right on through adults, the spectacle of a fireworks show I've always loved. But it reminded me that fireworks are a representation of war, of the cannons of war, and of celebrating war. And therefore, it is something to be thought about at this time for as we struggle against the imperialist tendencies and deliberate intentions of our own country, of our own country's military, as directed by our own country's ruling class, to the war-mongering affairs going on abroad and at home. It's very important to remember these things and remember the symbolism that we live with on a daily basis. A lot of it we take for granted. We just, you know, we grew up with it. It's just part of, you know, our experience and part of what we often count on in as representations of normalcy. And so it becomes very important to refocus sometimes and rethink and figure out if you actually want those symbols to represent you. and or if you want to represent those symbols, because you have to keep that in mind. No matter how progressive you might be, when you are traveling and you are in another country, or when you are talking to people whose nation is under attack by our own country, you are not always going to be seen as progressive. You are going to be seen as a representation of the country you come from. And therefore, it behooves you to be knowledgeable, be aware, and be, I don't like to say be sensitive exactly, but that's part of it. Be sensitive, be respectful of where people are coming from, and be truthful to yourself, right? There we are. Well, today, one of the things that I wanted to do is bring you up to date on the Ashley Williams case. We have talked about it here on this show over the last several weeks, almost months. And Ashley Williams is the young Richmond mother who was what one might call part of a process of getting people to plea bargain in our system. They're calling it now a kind of assembly line of plea bargaining in our system, and it would be one of the reasons why it has been very important to follow this case. On a personal or direct note, in terms of Ms. Williams, there is the fact that because of the problems with her representation and because of the issues at stake, she never had a trial, and therefore evidence that could have been brought to her defense and to shed light on the situation that she and her child who died were living in were not permitted to exist. And therefore, what has essentially happened at this point is that Ashley Williams is most likely going to get her trial. And that is huge, because when the defenders joined the Coalition for Justice, in particular the newspaper, when they joined the Coalition for Justice to learn more about this case and begin to push it out there for public awareness, Ms. Williams was facing her sentencing trial. She was on her way to the court hearing that would simply have said what her sentence was going to be as a result of her conviction, which was the result of her accepting to plea bargain for on a guilty plea. She had pled guilty to neglect and involuntary manslaughter. And the possibility was a sentence of anywhere from 5 years to 45 years. And that has now come about almost full circle, certainly 180 degrees, so that she is no longer facing that sentencing, but she is facing the likelihood of an actual trial so that evidence can be presented. Why is that important? Oh my, so many reasons. I'm going to read you a statement. It was essentially an update on the case, which is on the defender's website. So if you miss it today on the show and would like to read up on the history of this situation, it's at defendersfje.org. Community Concern Wins Trial for Ashley Williams. This is by Phil Willeto, the editor of the Virginia Defender. A wave of joy and relief swept a packed Richmond courtroom this morning as Ashley C. Williams, the young African-American woman who had pled guilty to letting her two-year-old son starve to death, was allowed to withdraw her plea. She will now proceed to her first trial in the case that has drawn intense interest from the local Black community, young white and Latino activists, and the news media. Asked for a comment on the decision by Chief Circuit Court Judge Richard T. Taylor Jr., Melva Jones, one of Williams' sisters, simply said, "I'm extremely happy. That's all. I'm happy." Added another sister, Alvatrice Williams, "Now we go on to something new, a trial. Ashley never had a trial." Over objections from prosecutors from Richmond's Commonwealth's Attorney's Office, Judge Taylor granted a defense motion to allow Williams to withdraw her guilty plea. Court-appointed attorney Carrie C. Bowen explained his client believes she has a credible defense, but that conflicting advice from two previous court-appointed attorneys had led to her pleading guilty to involuntary manslaughter and felony child abuse. Combined, the two offenses could bring a sentence of as long as 45 years. Now, as an aside, I have to say, I've heard of people being convicted of second-degree murder who've gotten less time than that. Williams, 27, of the working-class Fulton Hill section of Richmond, is the mother of four young children, three of whom are healthy. At the time of his death, two-year-old Deshaun weighed just 14 pounds. According to the Atlanta-based Centers for Disease Control, the typical weight for a child that age is between 23.75 and 34 pounds. Williams had Deshaun seen by a Medicaid-recommended doctor and the staff at a local hospital emergency room. A month before his death, he was seen by a city social worker. None of those professionals raised any concerns that the child might be in grave danger. Yet before the city's autopsy on Deshaun was completed, Williams was arrested and charged with neglect and second-degree homicide. When the autopsy report was finally released, it listed the manner of death as inconclusive. But prosecutors continued to pursue the charges. One of Williams' previous court-appointed attorneys, Pauline M. Ewald, had lined up a three expert witnesses to testify that there was no evidence of parental neglect. One of those witnesses, Dr. Cyril H. Wecht, a nationally recognized forensic pathologist, examined the child's medical records and concluded that Deshaun likely was suffering from DeGeorge syndrome, a genetic disorder that can make it difficult for the body to process food or liquids. At the time of Deshaun's death, his body contained both food and liquids, evidence that he had been fed. Bolstering Dr. Weck's theory is the fact that two of Williams' three sisters say they also have young male children who are severely underweight and must use feeding tubes to obtain nutrition. They say a third relative, the young son of a niece, suffers from the same condition. But before the case could go to trial, Judge Taylor had Ewald removed from the case, citing a conflict he said he had with her in another matter. The remaining court-appointed attorney, Devika Davis, then convinced Williams to plead guilty to what the prosecution today described as a lesser offense, neglect and involuntary manslaughter, which together carry the sentence of up to 45 years. Davis admits she did not try to contact Dr. Wecht, telling the black-owned Richmond Free Press that, quote, his opinion, in my view, was not based on science. The scientific evidence was questionable. Dr. Wecht, a former president of the American Academy of Forensic Science, currently heads the Board of Trustees of the American Board of Legal Medicine. He was selected as a forensic consultant for the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office in regard to the 1968 assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. At the time Williams decided to plead guilty, she had been imprisoned for months, was emotionally suffering from the loss of Deshaun, and the fact that after her arrest, her three other children had been placed into foster care. According to Ewald, Williams has since been diagnosed with clinical depression and is now receiving medication for that condition. Williams was scheduled for a sentencing hearing when King Salim Khalfani, executive director of the Virginia State NAACP, and one of Williams' sisters visited her in the city jail. As a result of their conversation, Williams decided she had been given bad advice by Davis and that she should ask to be allowed to withdraw her plea. Khalfani and other longtime Richmond Black activists came together as the Coalition for Justice to build support for Williams. Those involved were Richmond City Councilman E. Marty Jewell, former City Councilman Saad El Amin, and longtime community activists Bernice Travers and Roxy Allison. Joining the coalition's efforts were the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality and the Alliance for Progressive Values. The coalition was able to rally concerned members of the Black community and young whites and Latinos who had become politically active during the Occupy Wall Street movement. Members of the coalition spent July 4th strategizing about the case and writing a statement of concern, which was then sent to the area media, several email outreach lists, and various activist Facebook pages. As a result, today's hearing was the fourth in a row in which virtually every seat in courtroom 302 in the John Marshall Courts building was filled. In addition to the coalition, there were members of the anarchist Flying Brick Library, Occupy Virginia Beach, the Anti-Drug War November Coalition, the LGBTQ organization Southerners on New Ground, ministers and women's rights activists, along with Ashley Williams' relatives and other community supporters, and the media. Condemning what he called, quote, this assembly line plea bargain system of injustice, Khalfani credited the community with today's victory. Justice was served, he said. The judge ruled as he should have, and the community support, knowledge, and involvement was the deciding factor. If the people hadn't come forward and attended these hearings, Ashley Williams would now be serving a sentence. The next step in the case is for the defense and prosecution to agree on a date for the next court hearing. As soon as those dates are made public, the coalition will be calling for another mass turnout in the courtroom. During the last court hearing on June 19th, Judge Taylor stated that if he did grant a new trial, he would ask the Virginia Supreme Court to appoint another judge to hear the case. Taylor did not give a reason for that decision. Well, I want to thank you for bearing with me as I read that statement, but I felt it was important to make sure that I presented the information to you in as clear a manner as possible and concise, considering the complications of this case. It could have gone on if I had just been winging it. So thank you for listening. And as a reminder, that statement can be read. It's at defendersfje.org. And it was written on July 6th, which was the date of the hearing that resulted in Ashley Williams being able to withdraw her guilty plea and seek a new trial. So thank you for that. I'm going to take a moment to let you know that you are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRAR 97.3. It's LPFM, Richmond's radio for the rest of us. And you can learn more about The Defenders at defendersfje.org and .blogspot.com. And you can listen to past shows at defendersliveradio.blogspot.com. And don't forget to listen live online at wrir.org. Today is a day for bringing you up to date and then having a little chat about some things that that are still in the mix. This is, of course, an election year on a national level and a local level. Mayor Jones is running for re-election. He has one or two opponents, I believe. L. Shirley Harvey is running against him. And I believe there's a new candidate, and I have to look him up. And I apologize for that. But he does have a new candidate after Rick Tatnall withdrew his bid for candidacy for the mayor's office just last month. So on a local level, we have that. We have school board elections, and we have city council elections. And there are a lot, there are seats that are being contested that haven't been or haven't, at least in a couple of elections, really had real serious competition. So it will be in our best interests that I keep abreast and that start talking to you about some of the issues that are at stake in our community. Another issue that I wanted to point to is that of the issue of water and the minimum surcharge for water service in our city. It's something that has been circulating by people in our community. I heard about it probably most vociferously from the Oregon Hill community, and there is a petition that is circulating about the fact that Richmond's water rates are the proposed water rate, which I believe is going to go into effect this month, is now the highest in the country. I believe it's $49. That's the surcharge. That's where it starts. So every person in the city of Richmond who has water services starts off every month by paying $49. In the state of Virginia, I don't think there's anything anywhere near comparable to that. To that amount of money for the surcharge. I think Henrico's is less than $3 a month. And in Norfolk, I think it may be even less than $2 a month for that basic surcharge. So Richmond City, congratulations. At $49, you are at the head of the pack. What does that mean? Well, it means that across the board, no matter what your income level is, everyone pays the same surcharge, which always sounds equitable unless, of course, you're making $9,000 a year versus someone who's making $20,000 or $100,000 a year. $49 a month just to start drinking water, just to flush the toilet that first time. That's a pretty hefty tax. And that is not to contradict the way in which we should be profoundly grateful in this supremely wealthy country of ours that we get water delivered to our to our very toilets every single day. But obviously it bears looking at the method of delivery and the way in which we consider equitable distribution to be, in fact, equitable. And do we care about the collateral damage? And how do we demonstrate that we care about the collateral damage? Again, more things to focus on and to pay attention to. And leading from there, I'd like to remind you that the Virginia People's Assembly is being developed again. The 2013 Virginia People's Assembly will take place again in January, coinciding with the opening of the Virginia General Assembly. This year, there will be there's more people involved in the planning, and we expect that the 177 people that came together from organizations from across the across the state who come together for a conference, for agenda planning, for determining the demands for 2013, for networking together on issues that we believe are not considered the priority of the Virginia General Assembly and therefore will be the priority of the People's Assembly and the People's Agenda, is something that we believe will increase, will only grow in size going forward. There will be information that will be posted, of course, on our websites, but also on Facebook. You should look up the Virginia People's Assembly for historical information and for keeping up with what will be happening as we move forward. There will be announcements going out about planning, and so if you have the opportunity to get your organization or yourself involved in the Virginia People's Assembly going forward, I think you should look for the opportunity to do that. These are progressive activists working on issues as wide-ranging as any that we have covered on this program that involve the wars at home and abroad and some very targeted issues that need to be paid attention to, such as our criminal justice system and the challenges faced by hundreds of thousands of families in Virginia and millions of families across the country. The arbitrary nature of how quickly you can be swept up into our criminal justice system is phenomenal. And one of the key contributors to that is not only the legislation that that keeps people from being able to transition back into society, but it's also the legislation that so swiftly sweeps people into that system. And one of the key factors of that is the war on drugs, or what we more commonly refer to as the so-called war on drugs, which is very similar in its way to the war on terrorism, in the way that it is used to justify every manner of civil liberty violation. So it's key to pay attention to these things, and I hope that you will do that as you are reading the paper, as you are going to work each day, or not going to work each day, as many people are struggling with in this economic climate that we live in. And as I talk about climate, I want you to think about the fact that we are talking about climate change. That's our big worry, not weather, climate change. Yes, we've had a very hot summer, but I've just been reading a couple of history books about Richmond summer, Richmond July, back in the 1860s. And I got to tell you, they may not have had the equipment that we have now, but they did not have AC. They barely had ceiling fans. And those were, you know, manually or mechanically powered. So hot is hot, and we have to deal with it, and we have to learn how to deal with it. But the greater issue is climate change and what's happening to our planet as a whole and what's happening to our environment as a whole. And again, these are issues that are being concretely and directly addressed when people come together for the Virginia People's Assembly. And so, again, I hope that you will tune into that this year and work towards having local assemblies in your communities and then bring it all together at the Virginia the Virginia People's Assembly in January of 2013. Well, you have been a wonderful listening audience today, and I want to thank you for tuning in. I mentioned very quickly that I have a summer reading list, and I just want to share with you one book that I read was The Secrets of Mary Bowser by Lois Levine. I interviewed her recently on the show. The other book that I haven't read yet but is next on my list is The Crying Tree, which has to do with capital punishment and is also a book that the author of whom I interviewed earlier this summer, that was Nassim Raqqa. In addition, there is a book coming up that I'm going to probably recommend called Come August, Come Freedom. And we will learn more about that in September. The book is yet to be released, but it is about our own Gabriel's rebellion and touches a little bit on the life of Gabriel and his wife, Nan. Thank you for tuning in to Defenders Live here on WRIR, and I look forward to talking to you next week and keeping you posted on what's happening in Richmond, abroad, and throughout the world as we consider what's best for ourselves, for our children, and for moving forward from a human rights perspective and the right of oppressed peoples to self-determination. Thank you for tuning in, and keep up the struggle. We will talk next week. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.